this week's 51%, we hear from mothers on their thoughts during these changing times and meet the president of a foundation that works to advance gender and racial equality.
I always say that the final frontier of feminism is finance, and often women are the last to be able to get financing for their projects, whether it's an independent business or an independent movie.
I'm Allison Dunn, and this is 51%. Posterity is a piece for 51% by producer Ari Golden. It is the second installment in Golden's public radio series called A Mother's Lens. Golden weaves a mosaic of original song with interviews and insights from mothers whose lives have changed during times of national unrest, depicting hope for future generations.
Listen close, connect, relate to change taking place in the United States through the lens of a mother.
How has my life changed since the election?
How do we navigate?
What is it that we're actually envisioning for the future?
My hope is that this is a blip and that it is a catalyzing blip.
We need more bridge builders. I've been in the trenches for a long time doing this work. I'm a woman of color. You know, people say like, oh my gosh, all of a sudden, like, somebody turned on the lights and said, I'm so shocked, this is America. Half of this country feels this way. And I feel like, yes.
Since the U.S. election, the world seems to be on edge. The idea of America is being tested and asking us to stretch.
Hey, if you're alive right now and try to move through life with awareness and wisdom, you're on the transition team.
It's requiring people to look within and challenge their assumptions and what they believe to be true.
Every time it's come to a point where humanity has been lost, something has happened.
To open up.
So people can come back together and realize what is actually valued, what is actually needed.
Real human connection. Can we dare to be fully seen between the messy lines?
You know, what's happening for us right now as a country is everything that's been in the shadows.
Humble yourself.
It's in the cauldron and it's stirred up and hopefully boiling off.
We may or may not make it. And I think part of making it is being at peace with that and making a choice to keep being human.
Listen, listen to the inner voice.
This is an exciting opportunity to actually really change something.
A split-second decision.
Election night. I think there have only been three times in my life where I got such a clear message what I should be doing. I heard my voice say, I know what to do. And I decided that evening, clear as day, that I was releasing all the other work I do. Corporate employee development programs. And I am only going to focus on presentation and keynote coaching and training because I mean, the actual language I started scribbling that night, it's like I have to train up a cadre of people that are going to go out and bring work that's healing, supportive, that is embracing people of all walks of life.
My unique way of being able to help.
They look to help.
Some people are really out on stage with it, right?
Politically engaged.
Out there in the world and they're
doubling down on their commitment.
They're not any more important than teaching your kids to be compassionate and loving.
living in her story, living in history, with a finger on the pulse of this great unfolding mystery. Time is breathing to choose and use our daily lives toward healing.
We're in this position to be the ancestors who changed things or who saw things and made this big, incredible shift and said, no, this isn't acceptable.
We'll be able to continue going, and I think that we can change it around.
Building bridges.
Hopefully without a disaster, hopefully without a war.
It's forcing people to wake up.
We actually can just wake up and decide to live well and treat each other well.
Yes,
like how to
exactly.
be regenerative.
Well, we know it as moms.
It's not top down. It's not win or lose. It's collaborative.
Yes.
It's feminine.
It's feminine.
It's the mother.
It's the mother.
It's the mother. It's so true.
But it's gonna take people to come out and speak.
The role of women, the more women's role in society and in governance bubbles up, the more there is a stake that's different when you are the mother. And having that, even if you don't give birth yourself, you understand what that critical role of fostering a sense of responsibility for the world, or how you live in the world.
Try to set a spark in the next person so that the next person can spark up the next person, and it can be a chain.
How to be discerning.
That continues going.
It's daily decisions.
When you do something kind for someone, and what do you hope for is that that person does the same for whoever else.
Contributing to making this world a better place.
And that creates a chain, and that other person does it for the next person, and so on and so on.
Listen close, connect, relate to change taking place in the United States through the lens of a mother.
On Posterity, part of the series A Mother's Lens was created by independent producer and mother Ari Golden. You can find more of her work at arigolden.com. That's ARIGolden.com. We now bring you Dr. Sharon Ufberg with her 51% segment, Force of Nature. This time around, she interviews Ruth Ann Harnish, who is an investor, activist, coach, and philanthropist, and was at a time a media personality in Nashville, Tennessee. Harnish also is president and founder of the Harnish Foundation, which works to advance gender and racial equality and diversity, with a focus on women and girls in the areas of film, journalism, coaching, and convening. Ufberg asked Harnish why she created the foundation, which is embarking upon its 20th anniversary, and if the work has changed over the years.
You can imagine how much things have changed. I mean, 20 years ago was the last century. So everything has changed about the way everybody works. You know, that was one year before BlackBerry gave us real-time email. We got started 9 years before the first iPhone. So our 20th anniversary really is a look back to a way of life, really, that was different. And when I started the foundation, I came of age at a time when women were dramatically fighting for their right to identity. And there was a lot of focus on the individual as an achiever. And when I was no longer earning my living in the broadcast and journalism industry, because I had had the good fortune to marry someone who gave me money, I was able to start this charitable foundation, which at first I used to address the things that came to my attention during my career as a local news reporter. Our very first grant was to the Tennessee Justice Center, and that group, still in effect, by the way, with more to do than ever, fights for the rights of low-income people to make sure that they are getting what has been promised them by the government, Or if they believe the government should be doing more, they sue on behalf of the least powerful people to make the most powerful institutions do justice. And so that was where we started. And if justice is kind of a theme throughout what we've done for the last almost 20 years, it's because when I was a kid, it didn't seem like the world was fair. I can remember getting yelled at in class in grammar school because I didn't like to recite the Pledge of Allegiance. It didn't seem true to me. So I would, under my breath, be saying, with no liberty or justice at all. These were the days when black people in the South were not called black, before the use of the term African American, when people had separate drinking fountains, waiting rooms, bus stations, restaurants. I knew that wasn't fair. I knew it wasn't fair the way women never got to do anything, it seemed. We had one of the first televisions on our block. It was hard to find a woman doing anything except being somebody's mom, somebody's wife, somebody's girlfriend, maybe the bad girl. But it was probably the 1960s before many women had roles of equal daring importance and prominence in the television programming of the day. So I know what it means when Gina Davis says, you can't be what you can't see. And white men and white boys got to see that the world was available to them, and everybody else got to see our job was to make it easier for those guys to do whatever it is they wanted to do.
So in some ways, your interest in storytelling and in filmmaking and in supporting those women that are doing that kind of work, in a way, really mirrors this awareness you have that people really need to see the possibilities for women in order to actually be inspired to do that themselves.
They sure do. Don't you find it inspiring when you see something with a person breaking a barrier, doing something that we didn't know was possible to be done, and then someone is doing it? And somehow we all get inspired a little bit to reach a bit higher or to imagine that our limits are expanded a bit because the possibility has been brought to us.
I know that you are so generous and are very clear about the kinds of grants and the type of grant recipients that you select, so they are people that are really making a significant impact. And I'm wondering if you had some special stories to share with us about particular grant recipients and some of the work that they've done, and perhaps some of the projects that, you know, have been launched under your generosity.
Well, in the storytelling department, we have been supporters of the Sundance Institute for quite some time. And Sundance is, I think most people who follow the field would agree, the leading voice for independent film. And for a number of years, they have been committed to telling stories with more voices, to be representative of people who don't usually get a chance to either be the one writing the story, directing the story, starring in the story. And I have made some major investments at the Sundance Institute. In May, we had the very first Catalyst Women film financing event that brought investors together with directors and producers who were mostly women, leading films that are by or about or for women or centered on a woman's story. And I always say that the final frontier of feminism is finance, and often women are the last to be able to get financing for their projects, whether it's an independent business or an independent movie, much the same thing. So this is the kind of revolutionary work we're doing to bring new money to women's work. And, you know, I'm really proud of what we've accomplished, not just institutionally through Sundance, but I was an executive producer of the Oscar-nominated documentary, The Hunting Ground, on campus sexual assault. And that brought so much attention to a situation that we, frankly, never talked about in the United States of America, and certainly not elsewhere, that the problem of consent and speaking frankly about what happens when people's bodies are violated on a college campus kicked open a national discussion about this subject to teach consent. There were hundreds of screenings at universities that continue to this day, even though the film is now 2 years old. Legislation was introduced. One of the people we've supported, Amanda Nguyen, has introduced, and it was the only unanimous legislation passed by the U.S. Congress, a sexual assault survivor's bill of rights. So much to be done on that. We also then moved to the high school area, a Peabody Award-winning film, Audrey and Daisy, talking about how the sexual assault situation combined with social media, these high school girls were assaulted, and the assaults were published on social media, and each tried to take her own life, and one succeeded. And this is the story of what happens when young people get in over their heads with many things, including the use of social media, their physical relationships, substance use. It's all in there. There's so much that we can accomplish by bringing stories to the public that haven't been talked about. We also invested in an app, Callisto. It was adopted by Stanford, I think, just last week. There are several other universities that are using it to help people stay safe and deal with the aftermath of sexual assault if it happens. So in that area, these are some of our wide variety of investments in a general category.
I know that you've also even reached down to a younger population of girls with your Funny Girls project. Do you want to share a little bit about that one? It's so exciting, the work you're doing with that age group.
If there's one thing we've learned, whenever we work with women, they say, "Oh, I wish I'd learned this stuff when I was a kid," or "I wish somebody had taught me this sooner." Because we all have leadership qualities within us, and we put so many boundaries on ourselves. Executive Director Jenny Raymond and programmer Carla Blumenthal have been working on developing a curriculum for girls 8 to 13 that teaches core skills of leadership and the ability to govern one's own emotions and to cope with what happens in life, and packaged it all in 10 improv and movement units that over the course of 10 weeks certainly make a dramatic difference in how these girls respond to situations that they weren't expecting, how they express themselves, how they work in cooperation with others. It's really a beautiful thing to behold. I'm so proud of the team that put this together.
And it's so powerful for girls at that age to be learning with other peers, too, because that creates a support network for them as well. What a wonderful project. I mean, all of them at the Peabody Award-winning documentaries. It's a lot to be proud of. I know, Ruthanne, that you also are involved in another foundation project that is really interesting that I want to take a moment and let you share, which is called the Awesome Foundation and your Awesome Without Borders chapter. Can you tell us a little bit about how that works and what kinds of projects you, you know, you work on with the Awesome Foundation as well?
Sure. This is so accessible to everyone. The Awesome Foundation was started by 10 people who didn't want to get involved in the paperwork and the legalities of formal philanthropy. They just wanted to put money in things they thought were awesome. So once a month, they got together and put $100 cash in an envelope and gave it to some project or idea that they thought was awesome and forwarding awesomeness in the world. And now there are over 100 chapters all over the world. Every chapter does its own thing, and ours is Awesome Without Borders. Most are local, like Awesome Texas or Awesome Cleveland or something local like that. Ours is Awesome Without Borders because we'll take an application from anybody, anywhere. We give $1,000 a week, not $1,000 a month like most chapters. We do $1,000 a week to something we think is awesome. And if you've got something cooking you think is awesome, that $1,000 would make a huge difference in your ability to execute, please go to our website, awesomewithoutborders.org, and check out the application, see what it is we fund and what we don't fund, and meet our grantees. Sharon, I was shocked when my staff told me that in just a few weeks, we will hit our number 250 grantee in Awesome Without Borders, which means $250,000, $1,000 at a time, to advance awesome things. And if you see this website, you'll just be amazed. Just run your cursor over the pictures and see the variety of things we've done, from helping Syrian refugees get reunited with the four cats they had to leave behind, to people who are creating public artwork that everyone can enjoy. It's really awesome.
It's so fantastic, too, because I think it allows people that perhaps don't have as much affluence to still make a big difference. You know, you pool your $100 with, you know, several others, then you're really making a difference, and you don't need to feel like philanthropy is only for a small percentage of the people. So thank you so much for sharing that with me.
And I want to underscore what you said. Philanthropy is a big word, but it really means love of humanity. And you can express your love for humanity through a financial gift, through volunteering. Your gift doesn't have to be huge in order to be very significant to the causes and the organizations you care about. There are groups like 100 Women Who Care, 100 Men Who Care. They get together in huge numbers and just for a small check have managed to collectively give tens of thousands of dollars to their local areas. Awesome chapters, another great thing. But $100 is a car payment or rent for some people. So whatever it is that you can spare, that's what it is that's good enough to give.
Ruthanne, you're such an inspiration for so many women and men. I think that the work that you're doing really is making a huge difference in the world. I really want to thank you for taking the time to be with us today. And this is Dr. Sharon Ufberg on Force of Nature for 51%.
Dr. Sharon Ufberg is co-founder of the personal development wellness company Borrowed Wisdom in California. She writes for the Huffington Post and Thrive Global. Everything is awesome. And that's our show for this week. Thanks to Patrick Garrett for production assistance. Our executive producer is Dr. Alan Shartok. Our theme music is Glow in the Dark by Kevin Bartlett. This show is a national production of Northeast Public Radio. If you'd like to hear this show again, sign up for our podcast or visit the 51% archives on our website at wamc.org. This week's show is number 1459.